The most relevant and stimulating arts programmes on any Dublin radio station. Dublin City FM.
And that's the Sunday morning movement from the 4C Interludes with the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Stuart Bedford. A piece of music, a very famous piece of music by Benjamin Britten, of course. And this year is, as I said earlier, Benjamin Britten's centenary year. And the RTE Symphony Orchestra is celebrating with the second in a series of concerts this Friday entitled Big on Britten. And I'm delighted to welcome Declan McGovern, RTE National Symphony Orchestra manager, to the programme to tell us more about the concerts. Hello, Declan.
How are you doing?
Very well, thank you, and welcome along to the programme. I think it's fair to say that the 4C Interludes is really the, I suppose, it's the most familiar piece of music that we're that we instantly recognise as being by Benjamin Britten.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose the Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra would also be pretty well known. But I guess the 4C Interludes are renowned for their colour and their character, the sense of character that they have. For example, that movement you just played features the sounds of Sunday bells ringing out. Britten was a great man to capture community spirit and a sense of place. He lived in Suffolk, and he was a great painter of localities and of people through his music. And I think that's why Peter Grimes, well, it's his best-known opera from 1945, and those 4C interludes are taken from the opera, because the music was just so rich that actually these purely musical excerpts, could just live in their own right in the concert hall, quite away from being part of the opera. They now work as these great orchestral pieces.
I mean, it's interesting to when you say that. I mean, the very album I have in front of me that has the 4C interludes on it also has the symphonic suites from Gloriana, which is another one of his operas. Yeah. A very troubled production, I believe, from my very limited reading about it. But it's true to say, isn't it, that I think, I suppose, the vocal work and the opera work exist on a sort of a different plane, perhaps, to the orchestral work and the chamber work.
Yeah.
They can be maybe seen as sort of quite hard going at times, some of them, the operas.
Yes, I think so. I mean, he wrote an opera inspired by the Henry James novel, The Turn of the Screw. That's a brilliant opera. I mean, that's just a riveting, chilling tale that anybody would appreciate or get scared by, if you like. But I would say in all his operas, there is accessibility, because he was actually very in touch with his locality, with school choirs, with amateur musicians. He really set out to be a great communicator with audiences, and he wrote an awful lot of educational works. I mean, I mentioned The Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra, but there were also educational films, for example, The Postal Service or the Health Service. The British government used to make these promotional films. He would write the music. So he was a man very much in touch with the common people, if you like.
I saw a recent exhibition of his life on at the British Museum in London, and it was interesting looking at it. I mean, it was a very audio-visual sort of experience. He was a man that was unafraid to use the technology that was available to him.
Yes, absolutely. And actually, he was quite an inspired conductor, quite apart from being... I mean, he was this incredible talent. At the age of 2, he started playing the piano. By the time he was into his teens, he already had 100 compositions under his belt. He was so prolific. He never stopped writing. It was effortless. He understood how the orchestra worked from day one. Even before he became a teenager, he had read all the books. He knew how to do it. He was an inspired conductor, as I say, as well as being an amazing composer. And he really loved those sessions when he was working to film, in other words, conducting live music to film. And as you say, he did completely exploit that whole multimedia of its day. And this is the 1940s, you know. But he was very much pushing, you know, along with the poet William Auden, to, create incredible art that worked on a very popular level. So, in other words, to be played during the intervals in cinemas. And that was, of course, a great way for building audiences for the concert hall. He was really quite a genius at that. He probably did more in terms of modern composers to actually open the doors and to bring people in. And, of course, to go back to the Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra again, to this day, it's probably the most definitive way of discovering how all the different families and sounds within the orchestra work.
And I have to say, there is an absolutely brilliant app. I don't know whether you've come across it on iPad.
Yes.
from the Aubra
yeah.
Association, and they have put an extraordinary amount of work into this free app, a free download, where you can mess around with the Young
yeah.
Person's Guide to the Orchestra. So
there's
I suppose Britain's music being relevant today. And
yeah.
if we talk more generally about the series of concerts, you've three concerts that we're into the second of the three,
yeah.
and it's subtitled Britain in America, Britain and America. Can you tell me a little bit about his connection with the States? Is this
yeah.
somewhat ambiguous relationship that he had with the States and America at the outset of the Second World War?
Exactly. He was a conscientious objector to the Second World War. He was a man of peace, if you like, and wanted to use his art to try and, shall we say, challenge the whole concept of war. And he decided to leave the UK and go to the States. Auden had gone there. They were very close friends. So he kind of followed in the poet Auden's footsteps. And he settled in there. Now, he did feel guilty, and he did come back before the end of the Second World War, but he did get a special pardon so that he could put his talents to best use. I mean, he made the point that he would be absolutely hopeless on the battlefield or, you know, flying planes or at the front line of war. But, of course, mm-hmm. he did brilliant work in terms of boosting community morale when parts of the UK were being severely bombed, like Coventry and all of that kind of thing. So when he was in the States, he made great friends with Copland and Bernstein as well, and he really got into jazz and opened his ears to all kinds of music. The Americans loved him because he had that kind of English panache and sophistication, and particularly in that particular era, he was very good at winning compositions, in other words, commissions to write. So actually he had a ton of work over there, but decided to come back because I think he just felt unpatriotic leaving during, you know, such a period of turmoil. But he was away for a number of years, but came back before the end of the Second World War.
And on Friday we're going to hear some terrific pieces, including some of Bernstein's On the Town work, and then Copland's extraordinary ballet score for the Appalachian Spring.
That's it, absolutely. These are two big, well-known American works. I mean, most people will know the Appalachian Spring from the feature of the simple hymn or the tune on a Shaker melody,
mm-hmm.
Which I won't sing, but of course everybody will recognize that. It was originally a ballet score, but I think it's renowned for its evocation of prairies and the wide open landscapes of America. It's been used a lot in film music. If it hasn't been used there, a lot of modern film composers have copied Copland's style. He had this incredible technique for, as I say, conjuring up these vast planes of landscape, and of course he's arguably the single most influential American composer of the 20th century. But then Bernstein, we were very keen to put these three dance episodes from On the Town in, because they're just it's a brilliant concert opener. It's kind of quasi jazz, full of energy. It could only be the state, and in particular New York. And in fact, one of the movements is called Times Square, and it's an incredibly vivid picture of three guys partying, being out in the town, three sailors, so they're obviously on their land leave from being out at sea, and by God, do they go wild. And the music just tells it all. It's very, very powerful, evocative music.
And then you take the programme down a very interesting route with a nod towards Peter Peers, who was Britain's partner and a very fine tenor in his day,
yes.
with the Serenade for Tenor, Horn and Strings.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And again, this is a very evocative piece, one of the most best-known Britten pieces. As you say, it was written with peers in mind. So our tenor is going to be Andrew Staples. And the horn player, actually, when it was written, was a chap called Dennis Brain, who was this incredibly gifted horn player who died very young in a tragic car accident. And he was, there are great recordings of Dennis Brain. So this was written very much for Dennis Brain and Peter Peers. It's a setting of poems by Tennyson, Blake and Keats. I forget who the others are, but it's very evocative, inspired by night, you know, the theme of night. And, I think people who come along on Friday will enjoy those a lot, just because they're just very, you know, effective evocations of these poems and beautiful writing for the orchestra. Again, he was just a genius at knowing how different textures and tones and timbres within the orchestra can be evoked.
Is it fair to say that we don't hear much of Britten's music performed live at the moment?
Yeah, it is fair to say, and I have to say, I probably wouldn't have programmed quite so much Britten were it not for the fact that there's an anniversary.
Well, anniversaries are great occasions for highlighting somebody, I suppose.
Exactly.
Certainly, aren't they?
Exactly.
And if we move ahead a couple of weeks, I think it's in November. Is it the final concert in the trio?
Yes, exactly. So that's the 29th of November, and this is there's two major pieces in this. One is the Symphony for Cello and Orchestra with the fantastic Dutch cellist Peter Wispelwey. That probably may not be a hugely well-known work. I mean, of course it is in terms of, supporters of Britten's music and appreciators, shall we say, of music from the last century. But it's an incredible journey in which the cello leads the way. And it's not a conventional concerto where you would have a solo instrument featured with the orchestra. This is actually a symphonic, so it's a much bigger canvas. And as I say, it's a journey celebrating all the incredible things. He loved the cello, so this is a kind of an homage to the cello. And then in the second half of that concert, we have St. Nicholas, which I mentioned earlier, he was a great man for community choirs and amateur musicians. And this was written for the anniversary of a school in England, and it was very much focused on the resources that happened to be available. So there were boy sopranos, there was a children's choir, there was a full choir, and then he just collected amateur musicians from the neighbourhood and put them together. And he created what has become one of the most favourite Christmassy pieces, because it's the story of St. Nicholas. So maybe it's a bit early, the 29th
well,
of
you
November,
know.
But hey, the shopping has started, so oh,
well,
and why not us?
I think it'll make a change from the usual musical chestnuts we hear every time at this time of year. No offence, but there we are. And finally, I suppose I should mention that the concert will be broadcast on a rival network on the night.
Yeah.
Isn't that right, I believe?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
People can tune into Lyric FM from...
Well, it's kind of you to mention that.
Well, you know, I mean, they're everyone's going to make it, but everyone has a chance to hear it, which is very, very democratic, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Peter, it's been great talking to you. Thank you, or Declan, I beg your pardon. Thank you very much for coming on to Artbeat and telling us all about Britten, and the best of luck with the rest of the series.
Well, great. Well, look, thanks for the opportunity, and we'd love to. We always love meeting new people who fancy coming along on a Friday night, and with all of these concerts, they're going to be very enjoyable.
Well, so. Declan, I have to say, I think Friday nights really is the perfect introduction to Britten's music and that great sweep of American orchestral music as well.
Exactly.
It's going to be marvellous.
Exactly.
Looking forward to it. Looking forward to it.
Thank you.
Okay,
so
Declan, thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Take care.
Now.
Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Declan McGovern, RTE National Symphony Orchestra General Manager, talking about the upcoming Benjamin Britten concert this Friday, and more details of that from the National Concert Hall box office, which is 417-0000, 417-0000. Tickets are from €10 to that concert, and it's this Friday at 8 p.m. If you can't make it, it'll be on Lyric FM from 8 p.m. on Friday night. We'll carry on with another piece from the 4C Interludes. This is the final part from the 4C Interludes. It's Storm.